going to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Welcome you into another edition of Meet Me at Musial. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptaw, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter. With me, as always, Alan Medlock from Red Dirt Red Bird and AMedlock1 on Twitter. But joining us as a special guest this week is Mark Saxon from The Athletic. You know him. You read his stuff all the time, I am sure. Mark, thanks for joining us, and how you been?
Finally, at the winter warm-up, and Alan and I have been having a warm conversation here, so... It's fun to be on with you guys again. I think this is my second go-round, isn't it?
Yep. Last year we got you on Super Bowl Sunday, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
No.
Well, yeah.
I wish you could tell me who's going to win this year's Super Bowl.
So we won't have the pressure of the game there. I wish we'd have a little bit better finances if we did that, I guess. But speaking of time travel, it's not going to be too long until pitchers and catchers report. And so, if you don't mind, let's look back a little bit on this off season. What kind of stood out for you? Were you a little bit surprised? I know the Cardinals said at the beginning of the year they weren't going to do much, if anything. But were you surprised with what they did?
Yeah, well, if we're going to, you know, make this podcast about the offseason, we're going to have a lot of extra time to talk. There hasn't been a whole lot. I was chatting online with our Reds writer today, Trent Rosecrans, who does a great job. And, of course, they just signed Castellanos, and they were very aggressive earlier as well. And he was adding up all the spending in the National League Central, and I think he came away with the Reds have spent, I don't remember exactly, but five or six times as much as any team in the division this year. So, you know, the Cardinals are kind of in that mix, and whether that's, I don't think they would ever tell us this, but those two things may not be unrelated, right? The Brewers and the Cubs haven't done much, and maybe the Cardinals felt they could sort of, you know, as long as they're in that similar range that they were last year, 80, 85 plus, 86, 87, 88 wins, they'll take their chances. And so we didn't see them do a whole lot this winter. I still think they have a good team, but is it good enough? We're not going to know for a while.
Yeah, we were talking today on Twitter a little bit about, you know, some people thinking that the Cardinals would make a move with the Reds, you know, signing Castellanos. Mm-hmm. And that's not been the Cardinals' MO, for lack of a better word. But do you think the flip side is in there too? Like you were saying, you think they got maybe a little bit, I don't want to say complacent, but the idea is they don't really have to do much because the division just not to them yet. Unless the Reds, you know, make this jump, everybody else seems to have fallen back.
Yeah, I think the question becomes, like, how do you assess the state of baseball right now? Some people would argue that despite what it's looked like in the last 4 or 5 years, where it looks like these super teams are sort of jumping up there and just so much better than everybody else in the regular season, and then continuing that in the postseason, I guess some people haven't interpreted that as some kind of major change, and they still see the postseason as a bit of a crapshoot, and that seems to be the camp that the Cardinals are in. I think other teams are trying to take the crapshoot out of it by, you know, really investing heavily into what was already a really good farm system and becoming, you know, just an exceptional team. The Cardinals don't seem to have kind of nudged into that elite category, at least if you look on paper at what they have. But again, you never know. What if Dylan Carlson's a real impact guy? What if Miles Michaelis has a fantastic season or someone else surprises? A lot of things can happen, and I think they're just kind of trusting in what they have at the moment.
Well, that kind of leads me into the question. I was going to ask you if you feel at this point they're waiting to be optimistic or optimistic. Opportunistic is what I meant to say, as far as something that may be out there, or is it we're sticking to our guns and we're going to let these guys play? It's funny because the line that you used about, the postseason being a crapshoot, Mo had used that before at an event that we had attended. And you could kind of tell it was kind of the roll of the dice type of deal. But I kind of wonder, is it a situation now to where they are content with letting what they have in camp work itself out in camp? Or are they going to jump, you know, kind of like I liken it to maybe Yelich and the Brewers?
Well, I think it's interesting because we talk about Mo, but he has people he answers to, right? That's the people who own the team. Mm-hmm. And they just don't sound, you know, Daniel, you were there for Bill DeWitt Jr., I believe, when he talked to us in the media room. And, you know, he and I sparred a little bit. Not sparred, actually, it was very playful, but it was kind of, he said, we don't have room for this impact addition, a big money addition. So I said, well, hypothetically, what about $35 million? Of course, is what Arenado makes. And he said, no, that's significant. You know, that essentially couldn't happen is what he was saying, unless a lot close to the same amount of money went back. So that tells me, in answer to your question, I don't know that they are really looking to be all that opportunistic. I think front offices always have to be. And if there's a kind of a low level financial deal that they could pull off that they think would be an impact, they would do it. But I just don't see that being out there. The teams that are looking to trade guys are looking to get out from under big dollars. And that's not the category the Cardinals seem to be in, is taking on those.
No, and it's really interesting to see that. Because you're right, they don't – I guess if they were going to be opportunistic, they would have jumped on Marcell Ozuna a little bit more. You know, Ozuna signs with the Braves for – what, $200,000 more than they had already offered him with the qualifying offer. But it seems like once he turned down the qualifying offer, they weren't going to get back in that ballpark at all for him. And that's, I know that we got so many outfielders coming up, but it's still a little surprising that they didn't try to, you know, bring a guy in that can hit 30 home runs right there and see how it worked.
Yeah. I mean, the minute I saw that he had signed the deal that he did, it really hit me that what they had said, you know, what Bill DeWitt Jr. had said both at the beginning of the offseason and then just last weekend at FanFest at the winter warmup was exactly what they're doing. And so we have to take them at their word at this point. They weren't even willing to go. You know, I think what that tells us really when they offered the contract to Ozuna, the qualifying offer, they really thought there was no chance he would accept it, or they might not have even offered it to him, right? So that's certainly what it looks like. And nobody at the time thought he would accept it. So that was just a gamble that they took, and he, didn't accept it and signed a deal, as you mentioned, just $200,000 north of the qualifying offer. So it really tells us the Cardinals are not looking to spend money. I think the frustrating part, if there really are these two just sublime players out there, and that would be Nolan Arenado and Mookie Betts, that really are going to be traded and the Cardinals aren't going to be involved in that, I can fully understand why fans would be incredibly frustrated by that.
But, do you think that I don't know how to delve into this really, but what's the likelihood that Arenado's traded, though, do you think, like before the deadline? Kind of a loaded question, really.
It really looks like there's almost no way he stays.
Mm-hmm.
They could fire the GM, and it still might not work out, right? I mean, he really seems dissatisfied with the direction there. They've never figured out how to you know, solve the Coors Field problem. It's just an incredibly hard place to win consistently because you can't develop pitching. It breaks their spirit, and you know, we've seen some guys have great years there, but do they do it for 5, 6, 7 years like they do in other places? It doesn't seem like it on the pitching side. So I think he's kind of coming to terms with the fact that, you know, it's not really a winning environment there particularly. So he seems like he's intent on forcing their hand. So I do think he'll get traded, but I think people are starting to realize this. The Cardinals are just looking less and less like a landing spot for him, given the fact that they have just these couple of really bad contracts that, and they're really in the mode of just kind of waiting them out, it appears.
Yeah, I thought the give and take with you and Nick Groak was really good. And it was funny. He was actually on, I think it was with the Fastlane on the 101 this week. And I listened to some of the podcasts of it this weekend. And he had mentioned some things that were kind of surprising. Like the initial ask may have been Flaherty and he got a polite no. And then, some other things that they had kind of, in lack of a better term, said, hey, you've gotten paid. What are you worried about? Type situation, which I thought was, it was pretty nasty. I've had, not personally, but I know that the Tulsa Ball Club here was not sad to see their AA affiliate of the Rockies pulled because they weren't easy to work with. Have you ever heard anything similar to that?
I have not, actually. I know that, Breidich has been pretty brash in the past. He doesn't find there's any, real use of baseball media and things like that. But I have not heard that in specific reference to, minor league franchises. Though I think in the case of Tulsa, as well as Oklahoma City, if I'm not mistaken, they're both Dodgers affiliates now. Is that correct?
Yeah, they became Dodgers affiliates. It kind of fell in Tulsa's lap because the Dodgers organization bought the Oklahoma City Dodgers. And it was actually it was the Red Hawks at the time, and it was originally the 89ers. And that has had gone through some turmoil. After Texas pulled their teams out of here, it was kind of an up for grabs type situation. And the Dodgers went in and bought them.
Right.
Well, whenever there was a lot of rumblings that they were willing to pull the Drillers from the AA affiliate from here to Colorado Springs, then the Dodgers were opportunistic and kept everything here in the state of Oklahoma. So now you just go up, 412 on I-44 and, go from AA to AAA. So it's kind of an interesting situation how that worked here.
Yeah, and I think Peter Gruber, who's one of the owners of the Dodgers, also owns Mandalay Entertainment. He's a big Hollywood guy. He owned them previously. So I think for them it's a good deal in that regard too. And
okay.
MLB is starting to kind of like it when teams own some of their minor league affiliates because they think they put more money into their facilities and things. So I do see why that deal was done. But you're right. I mean, it does look like there's some mismanagement going on in Colorado. And if Arenado is sensing that, he could easily have enough push to force his way out of there, I think. And I think the question will be, if that is the case, his wishes are going to be big in this. And if he really is, as some have sort of conjectured, super high on the Cardinals as a landing spot, he could change this entirely just by kind of steering the Rockies that direction. I mean, I think the Cardinals would have to be interested if that were the case.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like Giancarlo Stanton in reverse.
Yeah, I would hate to see the pushback if he were to be traded somewhere, maybe a rivalry. If it's not New York, if it was a rival around here, that would be met with quite a bit of resentment.
I haven't paid much attention, of course, to the Rockies' internal management, but when you read the stories that are coming out now about how Tulowitzki had the same kind of problem, and it looked like Trevor Story was going to go to arbitration for the second year in a row.
I hear Daniel actually in the background.
I think we lost our showrunner here a little bit.
Alan seems to be cut off from me. So
I don't want to cut him off. Let me know.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like he's up and he's out and about. Have there been any further links that you know of outside of an Arenado type situation, more that you could, that you know enough, that we've heard enough that you can maybe expound upon?
You mean a trade possibility?
Yeah.
No, I really haven't. I'm not even sure they're all that active right now because, again, any deals that would happen right now as teams prepare for spring training would be kind of these out of the blue, big name, big money deals. There could be some smaller guys. I'm sure we'll see a list of spring training invites and minor league deals at some point. But in terms of guys who are going to move the needle, I really wonder right now whether they're even having those conversations. It doesn't seem to be, if you read the tea leaves.
Yeah.
But so I think we're going to see this team go to spring training, whether it leaves spring training. Sometimes you will see some trades made toward the end of spring training because of injuries. But I expect this 40-man to be the 40-man we see down there.
You know what? And there's an element of me that is actually fine with that. You know, it was is where I wanted to see them add another bat somewhere. I'm getting a message right now, but we'll keep going. Where was I? Exactly. And I, you know what, there's an intrigue to me to see what a Bader pushed could do, or what an O'Neill with 500 plus at bats could do, or a healthy Lane Thomas can do. And I agree with you that I think that Carlson's the outlier on that situation. I do believe he's going to have to outperform some guys, but I don't think service time manipulation will be a factor on that. I think that, you know, if he performs well, he'll probably get a shot. And I think there may have been an inkling to bring him to camp last year.
Yeah, I think there was, and he was over there at times and played in games, of course. And he was there actually at the beginning of camp last year. He just, I don't know that he made it to the much past when the game started. You know, one of the things they needed to see from Dylan Carlson, you could see the skill set 2 years ago. What you didn't see was a major league body, right? I mean, he was a skinny kid. He was still a teenager. Last year, he started looking like the other guys on the field. And then this year, I think when he showed up at winter warmup, I saw a man. I mean, he looks like a guy who's ready to, you know, get in uniform. He would blend right in with that team. And I think that's what they wanted. They wanted his body to catch up with kind of his skill set, and that's what kind of seems to have happened. The other thing to think about with this Ozuna question, even though you could say he doesn't directly block Dylan Carlson because there's right field, but he kind of does, because they don't really view Dylan Carlson as a center fielder per se, a major league center fielder at this stage. I think they view him as a corner guy. So if they're really not going to play him in center field, and that's Bader O'Neill's kind of territory, then he is kind of blocked, right? I mean, there's only two spots. Dexter Fowler's going to play a lot. Tommy Evans is going to play a lot. I think that went into the kind of the equation as well.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. And you know what? I didn't really think about development as far as physical development being that big of the equation. So that makes a lot of sense when you say that about how he looked like a different player, not the high school kid when he came back. You know, I will say, as a completely amateur eye, mm-hmm. whenever he saw him, it was funny. I said, I had some text message that went out, and whenever I saw him here for Springfield playing against Tulsa, he really had some bad routes on balls. Mm-hmm. And I made a comment. I said, well, he can play center field, but he's not a center fielder. Now, his batting, he led off for him, and, I mean, he was really patient, and he hit everything on the screws. That was the first trip, but he made some really athletic plays in the gap. And I was thinking, wow, this is – I mean, I can see what they see in him, basically. But, Mark, when he came back the next few times, he was a completely different player and looked like he could belong out there. So I can see how he's won over it. And it's one of those to where, like I tell my buddies, he's a name kind of like Alex Reyes that I don't like to bring up a lot because I don't want to jinx him. You know what I mean? One of those things.
That's a really good lesson with the actual Alex Reyes, right? I mean,
people
just forget about him and then be pleasantly surprised if he's able to contribute something. And frankly, you know, knowing him a little bit and seeing his work over the years, how good he can be, I wouldn't be shocked. There's another guy, right? We talk about they didn't do anything. Well, what if Alex Reyes is Alex Reyes again and ready to kind of start that career that we were all so excited about 3 years ago?
Sure.
It's going to happen. He's had terrible luck with this. Maybe he's an injury-prone guy. What if it does, though? That changes everything, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And that kind of leads me to the next question. I was just getting ready to steer to the pitching and ask you where – I believe that they're going to be good, that's going to be the strong point of the team. I think they're banking on that. Are we to be concerned at all that at Hudson, Flaherty put on, and the situation that they're in with Wainwright, and of course the hope for Martinez, are we worried about the innings load that Hudson and Flaherty threw last year?
I don't think so, because I think with Flaherty, they built him up in kind of a reasonable, you know, way that you would want to. They've both, you know, Hudson, of course, was relieving the previous season, so his innings jump is going to look fairly stark. But, you know, Mike Maddox is pretty diligent about that. And with guys with that bright a future, who are kind of the future of the team, I really think they were probably as careful as they should have been. Now, could they get hurt? Of course, you know, you see it all the time. But the other thing to think about, guys, and I think the reason why it's pretty bankable that, you know, this is a really exciting pitching staff is the depth. You know, right now they have at least six starters, like legit starters. So an injury in spring training, they could survive. You know, this is presuming Carlos Martinez is going to start, and I think there's some question about that. But let's say he can. They're going to camp with six, you know, veteran starters, if you count KK, you know, if those Korean innings as being a veteran. They have six veteran starters, not to mention Ryan Helsley, not to mention Ponce and all the guys we've been talking about for years as depth. The depth is just outstanding. And I think if they are concerned about innings, they could always step either of them back and use some of those other guys in the rotation. And I would think that they'll think along those lines as the season goes along.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's funny, just the overages in everyday players and in pitching, and Memphis could be loaded to start the season.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. We've had that conversation on here several times to where they could really have a lot of the leftovers down there and be really, really good there for the first part of the season and then force their way into the lineup.
Right, which they were. If you look at the starting rotation 2 years ago, it was ridiculous, right?
You
still had guys like Hudson and Gomber was pitching great, and you know, Flaherty had been there previously. So, you've seen, you know, the problem has been, of course, developing position players that make a true impact. And I think what's exciting about this, the minor league system for the Cardinals now, is it's top heavy in position players, right? Like, you've got not only Dylan Carlson and Nolan Gorman, who we haven't even talked about, who's still only 19, really did a lot of work on his swing this offseason in terms of the analytics. Then you've got guys like Kisner and Elijah Montero. You're starting to see some guys poke through on the position player side, and that's what this team's been lacking for really a couple generations now.
Yeah, it's you're almost handing it to me too easy, because I wanted to talk about your Nolan Gorman article.
I'm trying to cue you up.
Let's be honest here. This is my first time on now this was unintentional, but this is my first lead in 3 years of doing the podcast with Daniel. So I'm going to take it and run with it. And I'm going to take whatever breadcrumbs you leave for me. Yeah. On your article, the first thing that I thought about after reading that, and I'm referring to the one about the new approach that Jeff Albert is putting in, and you have Gorman as the example, and some of the technological advances they're going to use. The first thing that popped into my mind when I was reading that was, how open were they in sharing that information with you, and or how guarded have they been about the approach that they're going to use?
You know, they haven't been as guarded as I would have expected. I think because these types of technologies are so widespread in baseball now, I don't think they're viewed as proprietary any longer. Now, if I were to ask them, I'll give you an example. When I spoke to the hitting coach at Driveline Baseball, which is the group who Nolan Gorman worked with, he didn't want to give me his data per se, because that is proprietary, right? That's like, it's almost like a privacy thing, right? Like, they're not going to share that kinds of, but in terms of the generalities of what they're trying to do to get better, I think the Cardinals are willing to share their approach and also kind of invite people in to see how it could be helpful, because nobody really knows, right? Like, we have more evidence on the pitching side that this stuff's going to work. It's not as, stark on the hitting side. We're just now seeing the top prospects in baseball really jump in and take advantage and understand what spin means of a baseball coming off their bat. Whereas in pitching, we've been looking at spin for a while. We know top spin isn't ideal because you're not going to hit as many home runs. But what about side spin? You know, all these different things that they're now measuring, I do think they're trying to catch up on the hitting side. But to not use the tools and the very latest technology that we can as humans create is kind of silly when you think about how much work they're doing on the pitcher's side, you know, to use that data to get better. It seems crazy to me that hitters wouldn't be in the same boat, right?
That's incredible. The
tying run at second base. In the air to right center. This game is tied. Going to third is Pujols, and it's 9-9. They just won't go away.
All right. Well, you know, we tried this new recording software, and it's been great for us until tonight. So, Alan, I appreciate you covering with Mark there until even both of you got eventually kicked off and everything didn't work. But glad to have Mark join us. Hopefully we can have less of an issues next time. But, you know, it does sound like, you know, this is the team we're going to see. And I guess that's fine. But, you know, you start looking at what the Reds are doing. And I know there were some people online today saying, well, you know, the Reds aren't. I'm not saying the Reds are the favorite. I'm saying the Reds are going to be a lot more competitive than anybody wants them to be. And then while the Brewers and Cubs may be a step back, they're still going to be right there. And all it takes is, I think the Cardinals won 12-5 against the Reds last year. You know, if they go 8-8, they're going to be, you know, that four wins could be enough to keep them out of at least a division title. And, you know, maybe they can make it up somewhere else, but you know, they get the Yankees and all that kind of stuff this year. I'm just not 100% sure. And maybe you can tell me I'm wrong, but I'm just not 100% sure that holding course is going to be good enough for this team
to hold on to the division.
Well, yeah. I mean, maybe it's a wild card team, but you really don't want that.
Well, no. And you know, it's, I don't know. I'm cautiously optimistic because I kind of do want to see some of the guys get extended play. And some of that is with they would add. I may have drank the Kool-Aid on this one, is the fact that I feel like if they do what they do and go to end of the season with this 40-man roster, that they can adapt from there, like if they need to add at the deadline. But just once again, they haven't proven that they've been willing to do that in the last 4 or 5 years, and maybe more than that. You may even go back to, that's probably the Rasmus deal was probably a little bit further because you could probably consider Craig and all that a deal. But that's my biggest concern, is that they won't change. I do think they've got to be the favorite because I just feel like they have the best pitching. Now, whether that gets them through a full season, I don't know. That's, you know, in the earlier part of the show that Mark kind of made it sound like he was pretty confident in the arms, and that they are too, that they have enough that even if some of the innings limits gets these guys or their career pitching a career high of innings last year gets to these guys, that they're well compensated behind them and guys that can eat up some innings. So that makes me feel a little bit better. I'm not completely convinced that Cincinnati is that much better. Yes, they did bring in some high price guys and guys that I would like, being Moustakas and Castellanos both. But that's kind of a convoluted roster when you look at it. And they're banking on their pitching to be as good as it was last year. And I'm not so sure that wasn't an outlier. So I really don't know. I feel pretty confident about the team they are right now. And I'm fine with them going in as is. Now, if they run into problems, I hope they're willing to adjust. And that's part of my concern.
Yeah, I will say for Cincinnati, I mean, Trevor Bauer was not that good for them when he came in. If he's anything close to what Trevor Bauer has been in before, that's a big deal. I know you and I both like Luis Castillo. And, you know, I think that Cincinnati's got pretty much a solid player at just about every position. I guess that's what, you know, I think the Cardinals are still the favorite. Don't get me wrong. I just don't know that it's as obvious as it should be for the fact that they went to the NLCS and, you know, won 90 something games last year. You know, if the Reds hadn't done anything, yeah, because the like we said, the Brewers and Cubs have not done anything either, and they've probably maybe slightly worse. I worry. I'm a worrier sometimes, but I worry. You know, Adam Wainwright. Is Adam Wainwright going to be anything like he was last year? You know, Jack Flaherty's not going to have a one ERA in the second half next year. You know, Miles Michaelis, we've seen kind of good and bad. We'll have to see how that works out. Dakota Hudson, you know, there's a lot of concern about what Dakota Hudson's going to look like. So, yeah, I don't know. And you're right. They do have a lot of depth, and I think they could get by. I'm not saying that they're, like I said, if I had to pick, I'd probably still pick them to win. But I'd like it to be a lot. They could have done it. They could have made this their division. And right now, it's questionable about it, whether it's their division, and that doesn't make you feel real good about going deep in the playoffs either. Now, obviously, that can happen. We saw them get past Atlanta last year when we didn't really expect them to. But I don't know. It just feels like – and I can't fault DeWitt too much because, yeah, $170 million payroll or $165 or wherever they're at, that's a big chunk of money. Whether it's been spent right or not is a different story, but you still got to live with those live with the consequences of that, and they don't always get to say, well, okay, we're going to add some more to this money. They could, obviously, they've got the resources, but I can understand them trying to run it like a business, and they've earned the benefit of the doubt over the last 20 something years.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. There's sometimes where you just want to be like, man, just go out and do it. But I was like, well, they're in a position to where they can go out and do that because they never gone out and done that. You know what I mean? I always thought that with Harper last year. Yeah, they could take that on, but the reason they can take that on is because they've never done it before. And that business model has obviously worked, not to the degree that some people will admit. But you're right. Some of my now I want to make sure that I understood the question because I think I took a lot of my comment about whether they were probably the best team in the division or not. I kind of took that in the way that I still believe, and this may get blown out of the water because a lot of the theories that I believe in from growing up in the 80s and 90s are proven untrue. But the teams that win the offseason generally don't win during the season. Yeah. And, you know, I feel like sometimes you can sign and sign and sign, but sometimes you never mix. And that kind of goes that way in any sport, really. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I answered the question that it was. I wonder if the Marte deal didn't lose the Pirates 100 games, today. And the Brewers, you don't really know. I still feel like they're going to do something interesting to improve. I don't know. It's weird because I feel like they're counting on a bullpen that took a lot of lumps last year. They're counting on it to really carry them since they haven't improved the rotation as much. Chicago is still one of those that worries me because I think there may be this an us against them mentality, but I'm not so sure that they haven't checked it in either. No, with some of the comments about contracts and extending guys, and I think the Bryant thing may be a cloud, you know, over them. But they still kind of worry me a little bit. Then that kind of leaves Cincinnati, and then St. Louis, of course, and you know, I just still feel like they have the edge. But you're right. I mean, you could see one being, hey, if you just would have signed him, you wouldn't have lost the division by three games, you know, type of situation. Yeah. So I see where you're coming from. I just kind of wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, and I think that. You're right. They never have done this, but it doesn't do you any good to create this room if you don't use it every once in a while. And, you know, I guess they make the argument they did that with Goldschmidt, and that's fair. I'm still not sure that was necessarily the best overall just because of what we're going to be paying for the last, you know, as he's on his downhill slide versus somebody like Harper or Arenado that's a little bit more into their prime. But I'd much rather this ownership than just about any ownership in baseball. So don't get me wrong, but you know, when you start looking at, and I think we talked about this last time about how little, honestly, the tax is, the luxury tax is You know, I think if they were to hit I think the level's 207 this year, 208, maybe 210. I'm not 100% sure exactly where the level is, but if you're hitting it around there, I mean, you're paying like $2-4 million. And that's not, you know, in the grand scheme of things, not a big deal. Now, obviously, if I think it's after 2 years, you start losing draft pick areas, and I know they don't want to do that, and that's fair. But I don't know. And maybe it works out for the Cardinals where, you know, if Colorado does struggle this year, and then they can kind of turn around and do something with Arenado later in the year when they're not paying all the salary, and then the timing works where people like Yadier Molina and Adam Wainwright, well, Wainwright's not really a contract issue right now, but, you know, Yadi comes off, you're closer to coming off with Dexter and Carpenter, and maybe you decide you want to do that. But I hate that it feels like they're willing to miss out on long-term opportunities, because I feel like, and we don't know, that an Arenado would waive his no trade clause. It feels like they're going to run the risk of waiving, getting a guy for 6 years, whatever it may be, just because these two, you know, this year, 2 years here, it's going to be tight. And so instead of just, you know, suck it up for a couple of years and then having the benefit for a long period of time, they're just going to pass that on.
Yeah, great point. Great point. It's, it was funny. I heard some, feedback this morning on Mikolas, and it's kind of echoing what we were saying, and it kind of went on both sides of the equation, you know, that have they done enough, have they not done enough, and it turns into a, you know, did outside of making the playoffs, did we ever really complain that they did enough before now? You know, I can't really, it's funny how short-sighted our memories can be sometimes.
Yeah. It's true. I mean, again, they've done a good job. I can't argue with them too much, but hey, man, I just really predict having Nolan Arenado. I mean, that's one of those guys that I feel fits so well for St. Louis.
Well, and it's funny because I remember having a conversation before the offseason started to where it's like, well, they seem really content on going with what they've got. And then it was Adam Butler, and he and I were going back and forth, and he said, well, in this situation, he goes, you kind of turn into the Brewers a little bit to where you're probably pretty happy, but then you can wait and jump if something comes out, you know, and that's what they did with Yelich. You know, the Cardinals were told he wasn't available, and, you know, in January, they gained essentially two Gold Glove center fielders and the MVP in Yelich and Kane on the same day. And you're just thinking, okay, something's out there that they could get. You know, the bet still would be incredible, but he's the one-year guy, which you're probably not going to see them do. But, yeah, they're not, you know, almost just seems too perfect.
Yeah, I mean, if they're not going to add – and the thing, you know, they're not going to add 35 for Arenado. They're not going to wear, 28 or whatever it is for Betts. Or is Betts even under contract? It's his last year of arbitration. But, anyway, you know it's going to be in that range. And they're not going to do that, especially for, like you said, for 1 year guy. But I don't know. I agree. I hope that they will do something. But, you know, we hoped last year at the trading deadline that they would do something, and they didn't make even the minimal move that we thought would work, you know, of getting a Zach Wheeler and paying him for, you know, a couple of months. So, you know, in the last two or three years, it's just been so quiet at the trade deadline that it's very hard to go into a year and say, well, they'll fix that hole or they'll improve that if they need to, because I don't know that there's any guarantee that they will.
Yeah, and that's what worries me. Mm-hmm. You know, that's I hope it's not a situation where they're, you know, you play, just pull three names out of the hat where you go Fowler, Bader, O'Neill until you're trying to figure them out until August, and then that's when Thomas truly gets a shot, and then you're too late to do anything past that. You know, that's I even mentioned this to Mark that Reyes and Carlson are two names that I try not to say because I don't want to jinx them. So it's not that I'd forgotten about him, I just purposely didn't bring him up.
Well, and they're the wild cards, especially Reyes. I mean, but even with Reyes right now, I can't see. I mean, maybe if they start needing some innings, but he's not going to start much, if any. Just the way that the rotation is lined out, I don't think. So you're looking at a bullpen piece, which can be very helpful and can be, you know, he could pitch a couple of innings, two or three innings, and maybe take some meat off. No. I mean, there's definitely value in Alex Reyes, but it's not going to be the same as, you know, the Alex Reyes we saw, or we were thinking we were going to see 2 or 3 years ago. And as for Carlson, yeah, I mean, but even, yeah, you know, I guess you could, on the flip side of that one is, even if he matches, even if he came up and matched what Marcelo Zuna did, then you're just kind of back where you started, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it absolutely. And it's, yeah, it's funny, like, back on Reyes, even as much as I would just like to see him being a dominant, you know, piece in that rotation, even, like, physically, it's probably not going to be the best bet for that to happen. You know, so you hope that he can get the bullpen, control some of that wildness, and be super effective. Because then you're looking at a good pitching staff from top to bottom. If you get those guys, and yeah, you're right. I mean, it's you know, what are the true expectations for Carlson, and it's almost scary if they have any. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, you can't. I mean, the idea, you know, Dylan Carlson is unlikely to start the year with the big league club, so you don't know when he'll come up anyway. And then, yeah, you don't want to assume that, oh, he's going to come up and he's going to rake and he's going to be rookie of the year. I mean, that's a dangerous thing to be planning on. I mean, if you get it, great, but I think you got to plan on, you know, some sort of league average production or something like that at best from a guy that's coming up from AAA until he gets his bearings under him.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Other than that, you know, again, like Mark was saying, there's just not much the Cardinals have done. We're looking at just a couple of weeks away from spring training, and we'll see who gets the extension. We figure there's going to be a Yadier Molina extension coming up pretty soon. I'm sure there'll be talk about a Jack Flaherty, but I don't know that Flaherty's going to sign an extension as much as the Cardinals might want him to. And then we can start seeing what some of these people have, but, you know, just a couple of weeks off. It's amazing. It'll be here before we know it.
Sure. And you know what? That's another thing too, is it adds intrigue to spring, which guys like you and I are always going to watch these spring games when we can and break these situations down. But I mean, it's truly, it's going to be very interesting to see who takes off running. You know what I mean? I mean, it's going to be one of those to where I can't wait to see everybody that's in camp. And I mean, we haven't even, not that it's, I'm going to say this, but it's going to be an awful statement, but it's not like, I don't think they brought in Austin Dean for AAA depth. You know what I mean? I think that he's going to get a shot. He'll get a lot of spring at bats. You know that Thomas is. Do you worry at all about Thomas's wrist?
Well, I mean,
always an element to me on those.
Yeah, I do hope that the fact that he didn't come back last year, so he's had the full, you know, everything. He's had a lot of time to rest it and stuff. But yeah, that's always. I mean, you never know if people can adjust to that. It was DeRosa that never adjusted once he was hit. You know, a long time ago when he came over, he hit pretty soon after he got here, and his time in St. Louis was a failure. But he bounced back afterwards. Like I said, I think it's better that they didn't bring him. He didn't play at all, and he's had the full winter. But, yeah, we'll just have to wait and see. And then again, it's hard to know because you didn't see enough of Thomas. So it's hard to know, even if he struggles, if it's his wrist or if it's just the league kind of figuring him out a little bit.
Yeah, it's a great point. And it's one of those to where I was just like you know, we're counting on him to be in the conversation here, and we just wonder if he's going to come in full, you know, fully healthy. So, you know, and that's a great point. That makes me feel a little bit better about it because some of those guys are rushed back, and then they absolutely have no power. We've seen it with Molina, we've seen it with DeYoung, you've seen it with DeRosa, you've seen it with a lot of guys. I mean, some guys late in their career never regain it, and it's kind of a scary thought. But no, there's, like I said before on this, and I think I may have even said it when Jeff Jones was on with us, there's an element to me that would like to, at some point next year, see an extended run of O'Neill, Thomas, and Carlson in the outfield. And it's something that we probably won't see that. If we do see it, it'd probably be because of injuries that forced their hand at that, not by performance, and which is another scary thought. But we'll see how it goes. I thought Bader probably, that's going to rub people the wrong way, but he probably has the best way to approach it, the way that he did at winter warm-up.
Yeah, I will say, I think Mike Schilt's going to realize pretty early on, if he doesn't already, that he can't let Dexter Fowler hit 200 for 3 months. He can't let Harrison Bader hit 200 for three. I mean, these guys are going to have to produce kind of early, or they're going to get rotated out because there's just not that margin of error for the offense. You know, they don't have, you know, Paul Goldschmidt, you know, and then maybe they will. I mean, maybe Goldschmidt will bounce back some, but they don't have, you know, that big middle of the order guy, and so that they can afford to let Bader, as great as his glove is, be out there while he's struggling offensively. I think they're going to have to get into those replacements quickly. I just can't see, you know, maybe April, and maybe they'll give them the whole month of April, depending on how spring training goes. But I don't know that they can go much deeper than that, even though with the small samples, to, you know, at least give a chance to, you know, boost some offense, because they can't afford, I don't feel like, they can afford another May like they had last year. They were lucky to bounce back from that this year. And I think with the Reds being better and with the Brewers and Cubs right there, if they have another May where they went, what, 5-20 or something like that?
It was terrible, yeah.
And because they're not hitting, they're not going to recover from that. So I don't think Mike Schilt will have quite along as a leash. I mean, he's got another, you know, he's got a new contract. He's got another year under his belt. He's even admitted that he should have played, you know, Thomas a little bit more last year. So I don't think they will, but, you know, again, it's hard to know, and it's hard to see what kind of commitment they're going to make to guys like Carpenter and Fowler if they're not hitting.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, I keep thinking that what worries me, and I really pull for Fowler, but I wonder if we got the best of what's left in Fowler last year, if the best he can do is going to be matching that. I do expect a bounce back from Carpenter. I do. Now, at his age, I don't know what that bounce back necessarily means, but, I mean, don't you think they're happy with, you know, 20 homers, 25 doubles?
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah. You know, yeah. And that's it. That, you know, you can play, you know, with Edmund a little bit. You know, Edmund's one of those that's funny is I want to make the lineup out and say, hey, this is probably what it's going to be opening day. But I get the feeling that Edmund is going to be an everyday player at a different position, maybe. You know what I mean? And where that may be the opening day right fielder. I mean, I don't know. So that's another thing that I keep factoring in is I think that if he's up and he's going to stay up and they're going to use him, and it could be in a bunch of different positions, but he's going to be in that lineup. Do you get that same feeling?
Yeah, that's probably true. I do kind of think Carpenter's got a good chance of bouncing back some. There's a lot of pieces. You're right with Carpenter, with Edmund. You know, you're going to have that extra bat probably on the bench. So you're going to have to be able to take a Sosa or somebody like that and rotating these people around. I think we saw that Mike Schilt can do that a little bit more than maybe Mike Matheny did, but he wasn't necessarily just super at it last year either. Cause there is that balancing act that he's got to do between giving somebody enough leash to see what they can do versus, you know, cutting bait on them because they're not going to be able to do it. And, you know, I don't know where that is, where that line is for both Carpenter and Fowler. But it probably needs to be a shorter line than it was, than it has been.
Sure. And you know what? I almost expect it, especially they've kind of cleared the runway on that a little bit with Noah Rosarena. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they break camp. And, you know, injuries always make or always tell the story in spring because somebody always gets hurt. It's going to be fun to watch that. And we're going to see some lineups that are going to be probably pretty entertaining.
Yeah, I would hope. You know, early on, it won't matter. But, coming to the end of spring, we'll see what those lineups look like and see then early in the year. I hate to say spring training matters because it's such a small thing. But, you know, if Tyler Dill has a great year, a great spring, he's out and left, I think. And otherwise.
Yeah, I think that – I feel like left field's his job to lose. Yeah. kind of felt like that after the Jose Martinez trade.
But if Lane Thomas has a strong spring and he doesn't, I mean, they easily, I think they could make that. You could argue that they should, just because, you know, if they're going to start playing the hot hands or people that have earned it, you know, they got to start that early. I think Tyler Neal needs to have a good spring. I do think you're right. I think he's the incumbent that they've got maybe their thumb on the scale for him, but he's not as locked in as anybody else is.
Yeah, very true. And you know, and it's if we're being told the truth, all these should be open, but you just never know, you know. And that's kind of, I think that's what scares a lot of people, because they feel like some of these competitions are wrapped up.
Yeah, and they may be more open than they have been in the past. We'll have to wait and see. But we should be seeing them soon. It's 2 weeks, I think, as if I looked it up before the show, 2 weeks from tomorrow. We record this Monday night, the last of January. 2 weeks from tomorrow, that the spring training pitchers and catchers are supposed to report. Of course, a lot of people are already down in Jupiter. We've seen some pictures already, some people working out on their own time down there. So, you know, we'll see a lot more of that in the next week or so as we get closer. And by the time pitchers and catchers report, I think pretty much everybody's in camp. You know, all the hitters and stuff are too. So,
well, you saw that picture this week that, you know, two-thirds of our, you know, two-fourths of their infield are already down there in Wong and DeYoung.
Well, and I think I'm trying to remember who else was supposed to be down there. Somebody else that was going to be down there early on. I know, well, and Carlos Martinez is down there. Alex Reyes, I think, is already down there. I mean, you got a lot of people already there, so which is good. On the flip side, it also has them working a little longer in the year. So you do wonder about that sometimes and hope they don't do too much in spring so they don't have it at the end of the year. But
I've often wondered how they balance burnout. You know, and that spring burnout. So,
well, I've just gotten another notification. I'm afraid that we may lose something here, so I'm going to wrap this up for tonight. Alan and I, we won't be with you. We won't be with you this coming weekend. Alan's got a busy schedule, so unless I grab somebody, if something happens, I might grab a guest host to get in here. But other than that, we'll probably be with you the week after. I know we've got some more guests coming up. We'll be talking about those as they get a little closer. But until then, for Alan, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Good night.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss. And that's a winner. That's a winner. A World Series winner for the Cardinals.